Hello, Lilytown people. This is Roroshan from the Alize America forums. And welcome to LTPR, Lilytown Public Radio, a podcast of indeterminate length made for and by the fans of AliseAmerica.com, where we discuss the joy, the triumph, and the tragedy of being a North American fan of Alize. This is a little bit of an experiment for us, a different format that we're trying on for size. For the past couple months, we've been getting together to record unofficial fan commentary tracks for a variety of different Alize videos, which you can find either on the Alize America iTunes feed or in the podcast section of AlizeAmerica.com. And what we found was that even when the video was over, we still had a lot to say, even though the video generally only runs for between an hour and 90 minutes. We sometimes wind up talking for up to 3 hours. And a lot of what was said was at least as interesting as what got captured for the commentary tracks. So this week we've decided to just skip the video part of things altogether and move right on into the conversation that would normally happen afterwards. We'll see if it works, and if so, this may become a semi-regular feature here, probably alternating with the commentary episodes on the feed. If you have any comments, questions, or criticism, we do appreciate all three. All you have to do is join us in this episode's discussion thread in the podcast section of the Alize America forums. And if you're an Alize fan who'd like to take part in a future episode, just keep an eye out for the AAM chat party threads in the Alize discussion section. I usually post a thread about a week or two out from the date that we actually record, and you can find all the instructions about how exactly to join in there. It's super, super easy, and everybody's welcome. The only prerequisite is that you have to absolutely adore Alize, which, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm guessing is not a problem for you. All right, so without further ado, here's the first installment of LTPR, Pourquoi Alize? Hope you enjoy it. I'm Roroshan.
Hi, Roroshan. Oh, I'm Roman.
I'm the new guy, Shupik.
Do we have some kind of, like, hazing ritual or something? Does the new guy just get off scot-free?
I have to remember that for last time, make up a little script for him. Used to have that where he used to work, where someone would come in and do in the help desk or something, and they'd have someone call and do an interesting support call for him.
Where I used to work, we used to send the new guys to, we tell them to go get something out of the basement and not tell them that we actually didn't have a basement.
Right.
But I guess we'll be nice. Okay, so the topic of this one is Pourquoi Alize? Basically just an introduction, I guess, to Alize fandom and just a discussion of why a bunch of us here on the other side of the world are actually fans of this singer from France who doesn't even speak in a language that 98% of us understand. Does anyone want to start us off here?
Well, one could go back before having even discovered Alize, and in fact before either of us were even born. It really starts with basic human nature, I guess. Recently I was looking at some France Gall songs, and particularly Poupée de Ciel, Poupée de Son, which has a very catchy sound to it, you know, and I don't understand all of it and I don't bother to translate the lyrics, but it seemed like if you were to compare Alize to anything, it should be France Gall, because she really showed up as kind of a modern France Gall for the year 2000. I don't know if Milan had any intention to specifically recreate that, but I think she sort of did. It's, you know, a young lady coming of age and singing cute songs that speak of herself as a sensation and perhaps with a bit of faux vulnerability, perhaps not so faux. Moi Lolita is quite possibly the modern version of Poupée de Ciel, Poupée de Son, or a combination of some of France's earlier songs, just in the way it presents her and you know, the relation to the audience. And if you look at some of her later songs and how they change, you can see similar kind of a thing, you know, France Gall grew up and she realized some of the lyrics were kind of risque and I guess she didn't go for that. And actually, I was, if you could say anything like that about Alizé, I think it was worse for France. If you look at some lyrics of some of her songs and how they presented it, I don't know, maybe not. But the point is that the persona creation through the vocationary medium of singer is very similar between the two young ladies. They flirt with the subject of love and sex, the things that are just coming into being for a person of that age. But she's also partially a child still and presents the cute and innocent face of a girl growing up in the middle. If you check out the lyrics, Poupée de son, Poupée de ciel, Parle du bas, they're straddling the line between the simple life of a child and the mature life of an adult. So I think I haven't really looked at France all that much, but I think it's easy to see right away how they're similar. And, you know, I think that sort of a thing is something that appeals to people. You know, it tugs at the feelings of nostalgia for an age and older people, and the voice of the impressionable young girls of that age. Alizé herself was particularly beautiful, so of course that gets people's attention. You know, Alizé wasn't that young, but it sort of speaks to the Lolita complex.
Well, she was still pretty young. She was only, what, 15, 16 when she started?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So certainly, you know, Mylène, when she picked her, she knew that sort of a thing appealed to people, and that's what she was trying to do with that. So, you know, she was fresh and beautiful and everything was on the rise for her and it was novel. And so that's, and, you know, a product of Mylène, of course. Of course, I knew nothing of that when I first saw Alizé, you know, and what happened?
So everything I've just been talking about for 10 minutes didn't apply to me.
Well, except for that, you know, I mean, when you kind of get in it, you start to experience all this stuff, and so it does apply. I'm just saying, you know, when I first saw her, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about Mylène, never heard of her before. So yeah, when I first saw Alizé, the 16, 18 year old is what caught my attention. But then, you know, there's looking in for the trying to figure out what the lyrics mean, and there's a world of discovery that comes after that. So to put it simply, though, the combination of great music, her beautiful voice, and her physical beauty and sexy presentation is what grabbed my attention. And the investigation of the lyrics, the joy of bonding with the other fans, and the discovery of her beautiful personality is really what made me a fan. And I think the way she was presented and the persona that I described is I think that affected me, and in general, everyone is the reason why she became such a big superstar at the time so quickly.
Okay, that's a for somebody who said he came into this completely unarmed, that's a very thoughtful analysis, actually.
Well, no, I mean, I had notes. I just about whether I formatted them right or not.
Okay, so Shoepick is the new guy. What about you? You've only been an Alizé fan for a couple of weeks, actually. What was it about Alizé that appealed to you, that has made you such a big fan?
Well, I don't know if I'll be able to get up to the bar that Roman just set.
I do tend to ramble, sorry. Go ahead.
To me, I really just see a person there, and just seems to me like with so many of the artists from this country that they're just not real, they're characters, but when you see Alizé, it's her up there, I think, really.
And you know, I'll just make a comment about that. Even with whatever I said there, I think that is something that we've always agreed on over time, is that that's just the feeling that we get from Alizé. And so, beyond anything else, it comes down to a lot just when you look at her, you get a certain aura from her, and that's one of the things that everyone, I think, tends to feel.
Yeah, definitely. There is a certain, I guess, genuineness. Is that even a word? Genuineness? Or sincerity that...
Sure.
It is now, damn it. Anyway, so yeah, that you get from Alize that you don't necessarily get from, say, okay, well, to pick one of her contemporaries, Britney Spears, who came up at about the same time. I would say even within a couple months that Alize was making it big in Europe. Britney was doing the same thing over here with Hit Me Baby One More Time. And it's interesting to look at them kind of almost in comparison. I mean, there's no questioning that Alize's career was very meticulously engineered by Mylène and Laurent. But at the same time, she's got that kind of genuineness that I don't think you necessarily saw in Britney or any of her contemporaries over here in North America, where it seemed very manufactured and polished and almost overproduced. Just as an example of that, you know, you see, especially in a lot of Alize's earlier appearances when she's winning awards, or going back to the last discussion we had about Stars at Domicile, when she appears on that first episode and she just bursts into tears because she's so overwhelmed by, I guess, the emotion of it and just the experience that she's having. I mean, that's what, basically in the space of a year, she goes from being this hopeful on Grain de Star to being this superstar who's winning awards and acclaim. And like she says on Stars at Domicile, suddenly she's that girl on the poster that little girls have in their rooms. And it's that, I think, genuine emotion and that sincerity that makes the difference.
Right, and I just say, you know, she'll give a performance, and you're like, okay, yeah, that's a performance, you know, it's a performance, but then when it's over, she goes to talk to somebody or something, she's just Alize.
Okay, so let's back up a bit here. How did you guys discover Alize?
Well, Roshan and I were talking about this earlier, before everyone else showed up, in World of Warcraft, I mean, really, I think that gave her a lot of publicity that wasn't really expected.
Yeah, I'm curious as to how that came about. I know there have been a lot of people who found out about her that way.
Well, in World of Warcraft, just to explain for people who don't play, there's different races that you can pick. You could be a gnome, you can be a night elf, you can be a human, you can be an orc. And every race does a little... You can make your character dance. So every race has their own signature dance that they do when you do that as an emote in the game. And, you know, some of the dances have been based off of different artists throughout time. A good example is, yeah, Barrett's actually saying in the chat right now, the male orc dance. The male orc will do a dance that is just like MC Hammer when he did, you know, stop, hammer time. There's also the male night elf does a dance that's very reminiscent of Michael Jackson in the Beat It video. The dance that the female night elf does is an almost exact recreation of the choreography that Alize did for the television appearances that she was doing in promotion for Jean Aymar when it was launched as the first single from her second album. Yeah, Barrett saying note the almost part.
Yeah, it's part of it.
It's part of it. It's mainly that part that when she's singing the ba-da-dum part, when she's doing kind of that swaying movement with the hands kind of flapping behind her. I'm totally ruining the description of this, but anyway.
Well, you'd have to see it.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a you-had-to-be-there kind of thing. No, Barrett, I don't want to give an example of what it looks like, but thank you. So anyway. But apparently Jung's volunteering. All right. So anyway. This is where that dance came from, and of course, the night elf, the female night elf, is a very popular race and gender to play, especially among male gamers, because if you're going to be playing a game where you're essentially got your camera behind your character for 99% of it, you know, running through the woods and such, why not stare at a behind that you'd actually want to stare at for hours? Anyway, so where I'm going with this is...
Didn't know that part.
Oh yeah, for sure. This is why a lot of the rationale that I've heard from a lot of players who actually do play, they call themselves man characters, where it's a man playing a female character.
Okay, that's going a little too far. I don't need
That's the term! That's the term! I didn't make it up, it's just what they call it. So anyway, obviously people on YouTube started to, once it became evident that a lot of these dances were based on dances from people out there, people went and started looking for these comparisons. And there's a pretty famous video on YouTube that actually shows the comparison and shows what the inspirations are for the different World of Warcraft dances. And of course, when you get to the dance of that female night elf, they show a clip of Alize doing that dance from Jean Aymar. And of course, that serves as sort of a jumping off point for a lot of people. I know it certainly did for me. A little over a year ago, actually, a friend of mine who was playing World of Warcraft with me actually sent me a link to that video. And one of the comments he made in the email was, "You have to check out the girl who does the night elf dance." And of course, that it's very intriguing. And so, on YouTube, when you're watching a video, you get the related videos links that are on the side, and one of them is a link to the full performance of Jean Aymar, which I think is actually titled "Alize Sexy Fish Dance."
Yep, saw that one.
Good title. Well, you know what? It's kind of funny. Even though I had played Warcraft since way back in the 90s and so forth, and I'd heard about World of Warcraft and I was waiting for it for years, I guess by the time it came around, I just wasn't that into video games anymore or something like that. I don't know. But I never really ended up playing it. Well, and you have to play online and you have to pay for the connection to the server and all that kind of stuff, so I just never ended up doing it. But nevertheless, I was surfing around one night on YouTube. I guess 96 is when I really discovered YouTube and started spending a lot of time there, and just, saw some video, and you see one frame on there, and I was like, "Oh, this looks interesting. What is this?" And that was Jean Aymar, and watch that, and there you go.
It seems like Jean Aymar is the one that really caught much of our attention.
Well, it was definitely the big hit song in Mexico, and she actually credits YouTube to being the reason why she took off in Mexico the way she did. Although I've seen interviews with her where she says that it was actually La Isla Bonita that kind of got them hooked, and I'm not sure that's entirely 100% accurate. I think it was more Jean Aymar.
Yeah, or it might have been that, but obviously, for those of us who paid a lot of attention, I mean, they had TV shows with, eight women lined up dressed like Alize trying to do some kind of Jean Aymar dance, and, it was, that was what was really huge eventually there.
So in the chat here, Jung and Verit are actually saying that they kind of prefer La Isla Bonita to Jean Aymar. For me, it was actually, it's funny, I mean, obviously you watch Jean Aymar and it's very interesting. But what kind of got the hooks into me and turned me from being just Alize curious into actually thinking, okay, this is a girl that I would like to know more about, this is a singer who I would be interested in learning more about, was actually Ella Ella, which was another video that was linked off the Jean Aymar. I just because I think that it showed off more of her voice, for one thing, even though it's obviously not a 100% live performance. She's singing to a backing track, but I think her voice is a lot prettier in that one, and it just shows off, I think, a little bit more of her personality. Again, you get more of her, like I said before, that sincerity, that genuineness coming through.
Well, yeah, that is a great one. I still really love that video, and I was just watching that the other day and just, sitting here mesmerized by the sound of her voice, just listening to it. And that one also just has everything. I mean, she has multiple videos that just like totally are it, have everything.
Now, I actually haven't heard of this Ella Ella.
Oh. Well, you're missing out, man. Here, I'll write it in the chat for you.
It's funny because exactly, Barrett's saying here that it's actually a Franz Gall cover. It's not a song that she sang on any of her albums or that, that Mylene and Laurent wrote for her. It's a cover of a Franz Gall song that she does, I believe, on a special or something like that, right?
Yeah, it was a tribute to Franz Gall.
So you can imagine being a completely new fan, only having known of Alize for a few days and thinking, wow, this song is awesome, this is the best, and finding out that it's actually not even hers, and that she hadn't actually recorded it anywhere but in this special. I was kind of,
Right,
upset.
one single performance, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And incidentally, later on in that same show is when she did the Jean Aymar, that is the one that I was talking about that I first ever saw. So yeah, Alize was really on that day.
That was a good day for Alize. Okay, so that was what got you hooked. So what was it that pushed you over, that made you look beyond just a simple YouTube video and thinking that girl is really cute and the way she dances makes me feel funny in my swimsuit area?
I know you're going to go there.
Well, see, now this I can't really pin to one certain point. It was definitely more of a gradual thing that just, with every other little step I took, it was just a little bit more.
Well, yeah, that's what I would say is the thing with me, too. I mean, I think within, you know, within 2 weeks, I was a fan. But still, you know, over the months and months after that, it just came a little bit more, getting a little bit more involved. There's another thing that, you know, that I hadn't done before, didn't think was going to happen. I went to that party for her birthday in Washington, you know, with like a week's notice. I said, you know, at work, you know, can I take this day off? And, you know, went and did that. And that was certainly nothing that I had ever done anything like that before for that kind of a situation. So just a little bit more and more over about a year, really. And then, you know, the other thing is, it's like I was saying, there was a process of discovery, looking up the lyrics, finding more videos about her, interviews and stuff, and talking to people and finding out more about her personality. You know, that whole personality thing that we talk about that we like, you know, you don't know that right away, and you don't have any sense of it until later. Like, I saw people posting talking about how she was more classy than other, and, you know, I didn't know what they were talking about. It took a while to figure that out.
Well, definitely, definitely. I agree with that. It's funny, whenever you talk to all these A fans, one of the things that everybody kind of mentions is that kind of initial first few weeks of discovery when you're basically trying to absorb as much Alize as you can, and, you know, every link leads to another link, leads to another video, leads to another performance you hadn't seen before. Barrett's saying that the first few weeks were actually hellish, but oh, I see, because he had no YouTube back then. So I don't know how he survived, because YouTube is kind of, you know, your lifeline for a sort of a burgeoning Alize fan, because there's so much on there.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other thing I would say is that I remember thinking at some point, you know, several months in, I'd seen, I think, all the presentation, you know, at least, you know, one video of each song that of everything that she'd ever done. And I'm just thinking, I've never seen anything that I don't like.
See, that's my feeling exactly, and the other albums I have, there's normally just one song or a couple that I don't like that I skip, but I can take all 32 of Alize's songs, put them on shuffle on my iPod, and just listen all the way through for 2.5 hours.
Right, and then even songs like El Ella, there's a video of Franska doing that song, and, you know, it's all right, and, you know, if you look at the lyrics, it's an interesting song, but I wouldn't have been that interested if Alize hadn't done the version she did. And La Isla Bonita, you know, that was a good song. You know, obviously I'd heard that before, Madonna song. But I don't know, I wouldn't have ever thought of it again if I hadn't seen Alize do it, and I actually like her version better in both those cases. And then, what's that other one that she did? I'm trying to think. Oh, Il Jouet au Piano Debout. That song is also one that I probably would never been interested in unless Alize did it, and I really like it.
See, for me it was funny. I almost did it backwards, in that when I became a fan, Cica de Lis was actually only a few months old. It had come out in December, and I think I kind of discovered Alize somewhere around the end of February, beginning of March, and I actually decided to see if I could find some of her albums here, not knowing in any way just how really obscure she really was, especially, you know, in North America. Fortunately, I live in Canada, so there is, I think, a little bit more exposure to French culture, just because You know, it's one of the official languages and such. So there was actually a little store downtown in kind of a sneaky part of town where I'd looked it up online and went to go check it out, and then I'm walking there, you know, in the dark at night and thinking, oh my God, I am going to die. I am going to get shot for an Alize album, but it'll be worth it.
Yeah, it's that type of a feeling that really comes up on people.
So I was actually lucky that they did have one copy of Seek the Lease, which, you know, looking online, I saw was their most recent album. So that was actually the album that I started with and kind of completely devoured that and put that on my iPod and listened to that nonstop. And it's funny because I really hooked into that. And then from there, I went to MCE, and then from there, went to Gourmandise. So I listened to her evolve in reverse, almost. Whereas a lot of other people, of course, fans who had been around much, much longer than I had, obviously have followed her progression the other way. And there was I think in some corners, there was a little bit of a backlash towards Seek the Lease because it wasn't like the music that she'd been doing before with Mylène and Laurent. For me, it was kind of the opposite, where I was going back and listening to the other albums, the previous albums, and I'm like, well, this is different. This isn't what I came to expect. So I kind of almost had to do the reverse and come to appreciate the earlier albums as opposed to what other fans were doing, where they were having a harder time kind of embracing Seek the Lease based on how different it was from the earlier albums.
That's interesting. It's just sort of like, okay, so you like Alize, and then you deal it with, like, your music or something.
See, now, this is a problem I never really had, because I obtained all three of her albums at relatively the same time, and then I just listened to them in shuffle mode. So, to me, I don't really distinguish the albums as much as just Alize.
Well, so, yeah, so that talks about how people became a fan, and this is a little strange. We have you know, the three of us are kind of on all these different levels. We don't have anyone with a mic here, like Barrett, who knew about her since way back in 2003, whatever, even went into a concert.
Well, Barrett more or less grew up with Alize. I mean, he discovered her when he was, what, like 10 or 8 or some ridiculously young age like that?
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, that's a totally different experience.
10. I was young and metrosexual.
Jung says he's still metrosexual. So, yeah, so then that brings us through, you know, to 2008 and into the present. So, you know, have things changed for people? And if so, you know, maybe talk about why you're still a fan.
Well, I mean, for me, no, because like I said, I discovered her in 2008 and then kind of worked my way backwards. So if anything, I'm kind of excited to see more of the kind of things she was doing with Seek the Lease. Some of my favorite Alize songs actually come off the third album. I really dig Lilytown, for example. I really like Décollage, even though I know a lot of people are kind of down on that song. Mademoiselle Juliet, I liked a lot at first. I think backed off a little bit on that. I'm not entirely sure why. And then talking about the reorchestrations like we did during the Tokyo track, her reorchestration of Je Peux Entendre that she did for that concert is actually probably hands down my favorite song altogether.
That's interesting.
Lyrically, I know it's not as strong as some of the others, definitely. And I see where, for example, where Snatcher was coming from, where he is saying that it compared to some of the others, it's maybe a little bit childish, it's maybe a little bit more poppy and not as deep as some of the others, but for the music and just her voice, I think it suits her really well.
Yeah, that's where it comes down. That's particularly, like you said, you know, most people don't know French. I didn't know any French when I discovered Alize, you know, started trying to learn 2 weeks after I saw her. But
I was going to ask you that. So it was Alize that kind of motivated you to start learning French?
Well, you know, it's kind of a weird story. To be absolutely honest, I had been thinking about it kind of later part of 2006, I guess. And I think I had even started to look up some of these online things like Rosetta Stone. And, you know, I was even starting to get to the point where I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. But, you know, it's just one of those things that you just kind of and you know, maybe you get around to it. It wasn't any kind of priority or anything. And so then when I saw her, then I just, you know, it was like 2 days before I really was like, okay, I'm on this woman. Who is she? What's going on? And you know, I want to be involved. And so then I was just like, oh, well, that's it. I'm definitely learning it now, you know. And so I ordered that Rosetta Stone thing, got it on the 1st of January 2007. And, you know, it didn't really, like, the voice recognition part and stuff didn't really work that well. So I ran out to Best Buy, got a new sound card to make it work. I couldn't wait for it to get sent in the mail or anything. So I got going on that. Unfortunately, not really been consistent enough on practicing it, but you know, like I got an email from Amazon saying that there was a reduction in the price of my order of Les Enfoirés this year, which turned out to be un centime, 1 cent. It's kind of funny, but I was able to read that, and you know, no problem. I understood exactly what they were saying, so it is nice that I've been able to learn something. Now, actually, speaking it and understanding what people are saying is a lot harder still, but...
Well, yeah, for sure, definitely.
Now, how does the Rosetta Stone work out for you? Because what I've heard about it is pretty negative about that software.
Well, my experience at first was that it was... I really liked it. It was fun to do, and that was the thing. I had fun doing it for months, you know, for I don't know how long. It was really easy, you know. You see a picture and they say something, and then you gotta like choose. Maybe they show you different pictures, and you gotta choose which one they're saying, or you know, there's different things that you can do. And I think it's a good way to start. Like if you do that, you learn how to pronounce things, and you kind of learn to hear it. And then if you take a class, you know, you'll kind of be able to speak it by that time. I would say that, you know, certainly for a person who has trouble with motivation as well, taking an actual class is the best thing you can do. And ultimately, you know, that's where you're interacting with people, and you have to talk to them, and you have to hear other people speak. And so I think that's necessary.
Well, for me, it's funny because, like I was saying, French is actually the second official language of Canada, so because of Quebec, obviously. So we have to take French in school pretty much from kindergarten right through till, I think now it's grade 9 when you're allowed to finally drop it. So I took French in school for probably about, 12 years or something like that. And then immediately, as soon as I could, after grade 9, dropped it because I was like, what the hell? When am I ever going to need this? You know what I mean? So I actually have... Well, exactly, and now I look back on it and I'm kicking myself, right? But yeah, at the time, I was like, I am never going to use this. And though, even though I had done pretty decent in French, it really didn't interest me. But as a result of all that, I've actually got a relatively decent French vocabulary. Granted, it's French Canadian, so it's not quite the same as, say, Parisian French. From what I understand, Parisians actually kind of look at Canadian French as being, you know, ghetto French. But in listening to Alize, it's kind of started to come back to me. And even though I haven't actually worked on French in years, I'm finding that more and more of it is coming back to me the more I listen to it. And while I still have a lot of trouble translating spoken French, if I look at lyrics or sometimes if I hear the song, and particularly the ballads where she's not necessarily going very quickly, I can actually grasp some of the meaning, at least the literal meaning of it. And one of the neat things about, like we were saying before, sort of that initial exploration, is that the more you hear a song and, you know, the more that you understand what is being said, you suddenly one day sit up and think, oh my God, there's a double meaning to that. There's this completely separate double entendre that I never understood before, and it kind of makes the song fresh again, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've done some translation of some of her songs, and then, you know, several months or a year later went back, and I'm like, oh man, I know what this part means. I didn't know that before, you know. And the online tools is usually, it's mostly what I use. I mean, sometimes I can just look at it and know, but there's also a lot that's, you know, you can look stuff up, even phrases. And so that is cool to do that. You know, that's the other thing that, you know, I think French people listen to the song, you know, Malavita or whatever, and they just think, you know, they know what the words are, they know what she's saying, and they don't feel like they need to investigate it, so they miss some of the extra meaning that some of us may understand, you know what I mean?
Which is ironic, given that for most of us, it's a second language, if even that.
Right, I mean, there's all kinds of songs in English that I hear, and I think, what the heck was that part all about? I have no clue what he's talking about, you know, but I just don't feel the inclination to go look it up. Whereas in with Alize, it was like, oh, wow, you know, I'm a fan instantly here, and I have no clue what she's saying. Of course, I have to go look it up. And then what happens is you get on these fan forums, and there's these big, long discussions where, you know, people, you know, well, I think it means this, well, I think it means that. And you know, they're talking about, oh, well, this word came from, you know, this is like a reference to a common childhood song in France and, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Hey, you guys, it's Chompers. Just got back from the zoo.
Hey, cool, we got someone else on here.
Hey, Chompers, what's up, man?
Oh, not much. Am I still in for the recording?
Yeah, we're good, man.
We're pretty deep in here, but jump in anytime if you got something to say.
I heard you guys just talking a minute ago. Yeah, we were talking about something weird in our anthropology class. They were saying, our teacher was saying that if you don't actually speak a language or start to learn a language before, like, age 9, I think it was, that you can never become totally fluent as a natural-born speaker.
Well, yeah, I've heard a lot about that. You know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of people who come to America or whatever after, you know, they're an adult, and they eventually learn to speak. But, okay, here's a great example. Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, he came to the U.S. when he was 20, and obviously he's been here for decades, but he still has that same accent that he's had the whole time, you know. And so that's the thing, you can learn to speak it, but you probably always have a little bit of an accent, maybe even a little bit of trouble with some of the grammar, stuff like that. It's not totally impossible, but typically that's the way it is.
I guess that is a pretty good example. Most of the times it would seem kind of stupid if you were living in a country, you wouldn't be able to become totally master the language.
Yeah, and I think what happens is people learn to speak the language just fine. It's just that when you're growing up, it's like everything is mimicking. You mimic exactly the way other people talk. And so, but if you've learned a certain way to pronounce things, I think what it is the actual, you know, the muscles in the mouth and everything sort of grow in a certain way, and you get hooked on feeling like this is a way to move. And so that's part of the problem with the accent, is it's something that you really have to work to overcome. And yeah, I don't know if I could ever do that at this point, but, you know, for me, I wanted to learn where I was thinking, like, God, I would really like to be able to just speak it, so you wouldn't even know that I'm not French, you know, but I've discovered how difficult it is to learning without, you know, being immersed in it, as they say. You know, I don't think I'll ever really get very far, but in any case, it would be nice to just be able to have a conversation and know what the heck people are talking about, and, you know, maybe, okay, I don't know what this word means, explain that to me. But then, you know, it even goes beyond that to where, you know, there's the colloquial language that people use. You know, people who are teenagers and stuff, they're going to be saying stuff that unless you're hanging out with them, you know, even if you are French, you don't know what the heck they're talking about.
Well, exactly, and that's, you know, the biggest thing about languages, and that's one of the reasons why I've heard English, for example, to pick up as a second language is so difficult, because there's so many idioms and, you know, exceptions to grammatical rules and exceptions to the way that you conjugate verbs and such, that for someone who's not a native speaker, it's almost completely impenetrable.
Yeah, it's funny, it's a lot of times just little, short, simple things that people say that are the hardest to figure out. You know, whether you hear it or see it written, what it means.
Yeah, I play a lot of online games, and sometimes we'll get people from different countries that we talk to. And my brother, I think, used "Cat Got Your Tongue," and they had no idea, and had to spend like 30 minutes trying to describe it to somebody.
Yeah, that's right. Or I was just thinking, like if we were talking about doing something and everybody was kind of vacillating on it, and you're like, "Well, I don't know," and someone said, like, "How about it?" You know, if you didn't know English, you'd be like, "How about it? What the heck does that mean?" You know,
Right, yeah.
it's just trying to get like the specific meanings out of the short little phrase that, you know, the words themselves don't carry any of the meaning. It's the phrase all together that means something, but you don't tend to learn that way. You tend to learn vocabulary. What does this word mean, you know?
Well, it's funny, back when we were discussing the banner that Ben has been trying to produce for Allisane America and Lilytown USA, I actually went and was looking at different French idioms that maybe we could put on the banner. Like, he wanted to use or translate the American phrase, "We've flown all the way from America, and boy, are our arms tired," and was finding out that it wasn't necessarily translating all that well into French, just because in French it's not an idiom. So I had actually gone on to see if I could find any idioms about flying in French. And you go through some of these, they've got databases and web pages about them, and you go to some, and it's like, wow, that is just completely foreign to me, naturally, but it's just funny. And there was, oh, I wish I could find the link. There was one page that actually was really good in that it took a French idiom that looked totally almost incomprehensible, even when you translate it into English. And then they said, well, this is like this idiom in English, and it pretty much means the same thing, but it was just the vocabulary of it was just totally 100% different.
Well, that's an interesting example because, you know, that started out as a joke, and then people had to, oh, I get what you're saying, you know, make the connection, and then it's funny, and then, you know, it just became one of these, oh, you know, everyone's heard that one kind of a thing here, and so you could introduce it into French, and it would work just exactly the same. It's just that right off, people would have to first get the joke.
Exactly. It doesn't have that. It's not a trope in France the way it's a trope in, you know, North America.
Yeah, so it'd probably be kind of strange on a banner because first people would be like, what does that mean? And then, oh,
Well,
okay,
exactly, and I think that's
why would
why
they do that? And then they'd just be like, okay, that was kind of stupid.
Well, and I think that's why he eventually abandoned that and instead went for Traverser l'Hémisphère for Alizé.
Well, and that's a particularly good one because it's right out of her song, so.
See, I really like the language barrier. I mean, it almost allows me to just go back into my thoughts and I can just reflect.
Well, I will say that I think, you know, this sort of exotic nature of her, because, you know, she's French, and for those of us who aren't, you know, and if we don't know the language, it's something we need to learn. It's, you know, it's something novel and sort of mysterious, and I think that probably also did was part of the draw. And, you know, I mean, in the U.S., I think there's a lot of you know, what was already there before I even, you know, saw these A or anything, is this sort of thinking, like, you know, the French language is kind of sexy and whatever, and certainly, you know, French girls, blah blah blah, and well, Alize proved that, you know, so.
Another thing for me that I think made me a fan is my ethnicity is French, so I think it's also kind of a fascination and a wanting to learn about, I guess, my kind of culture, really.
That's kind of part of it for me as well. My mom's maiden name, for example, is Laflamme, which is obviously French. And you know, obviously that comes from more of a place of being French Canadian. But if you go back a couple, you know, a few generations, that family actually did hail from France. So that is part of it for me as well.
Yeah, this is the m before I never really learned about bands, but after Alize, I've been starting to look a lot more into my bands, where they come from, their culture, and things like that. So it's a kind of a new thing for me as well, that because of her now, I'm more interested in music and learning about the cultures that they come from and different things that are different from the U.S.
So let's back up a bit here for a second. Chompers, we kind of all told our stories about how we became Ollie's A fans. How about you?
Well, I had been playing World of Warcraft. I don't play anymore.
Oh, there's another one.
Yeah, well, it seems like that's a lot of way people got introduced. I was looking at like different Easter eggs and trying to find special little things that connect the game back to the U.S. And there were, oh, a lot of the dances in the games are from different dances in real life. And someone had tagged that the female night elf dance was also from this French singer, and there was a link. So I clicked on it. It was the Jean Amar video, and I didn't really think much of it at the first time I watched it, and I was kind of catchy, you know, and she was really beautiful.
This has been a production of Ollie's in America, copyright 2009, and fully owned by its hosts. Our theme music was produced and performed by I'm Raj. You can find more podcasts, high-quality videos, image galleries, discussion forums, and more, all dedicated to the one and only Ollie's A, at www.olliesamerica.com.
Oh, I'm dancing again. I hope all your friends are enjoying the show.